Do you ever feel tired of living on Earth? You see the same grey buildings every day, same weather. It's the same boring things every day. Well, we got a solution for you. Because for our Honest project, we are looking into how to build a city on Mars. And when we're going to do that, we want to start off the right foot. I have sitting next to me five experts who will share their knowledge that they've gained on the subjects of livability. They had the courage to research all of this to share it with us today. So please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Casper. I'm an expert on green spaces and the interrelation between health and place. And I would like to contribute to creating together the perfect future city on Mars.
Well, I'm Niels. I'm an expert in infrastructure and in green spaces, like Casper. And I also want to contribute to a new city on Mars.
Hello, I'm Flora. I'm an expert on public spaces, and I want to contribute particularly on the public spaces in the city.
Hey, I'm Tristan. I'm also an expert in infrastructure, and I hope to make the world a better place, and hopefully that's possible on Mars.
Hi, I'm Laila. I'm an expert on mixed functions and equality, and just like my colleagues, I'd like to contribute to a modern city on Mars.
Yes, and finally, my name is Naomi, and I will be the host of today's discussion. I will first start with briefly explaining what livability even means. And on the side of the government of the Netherlands, it's defined as the extent to which a neighborhood, district, village, or other areas are attractive and are suitable for living. So it's a very subjective term and has a different meaning for everyone. It's also a bit of a container term because there's many aspects that can contribute to an area being attractive and or suitable. There are five different aspects to livability that we defined according to scientific literature. And the first one is mixed functions. The second one is good infrastructure. The third, green in a city. Fourth, health. And fifth, facilities and public spaces. And for each of these factors, as mentioned before, we have a guest who is an expert in that field and will explain to us how that aspect contributes to livability. And in the recent years, livability has also been increasingly important for policy making, and therefore it's really good for us to know how livability could influence the policy making on Mars, because we want to create an ideal city. And policy making is in this case based on opinions on the way surroundings are shaped. To have some examples in the back of our minds as we start, I want to mention the case of Hamburg. The population there has experienced explosive growth, and this comes with a huge shortage on the housing market, which means that there is need for more livability. So the municipality of Hamburg is funding innovative projects, which include Gemeinschaftswohnprojekt, which means community housing projects, where communities live together in shared houses. And another example is Baugemeinschaften, which translates to building communities, where people build their own houses. And these two together contribute to the improvement of quality of life and also economic progress. And so far the introduction, I'd now like to start with the topic of infrastructure, which Niels and Tristan are experts of. And first of all, why is infrastructure so important for a city on Mars?
Well, you see that through history, infrastructure has always been really important for a state. This is the reason that in the Roman Empire, there was a great network of roads through Europe. First, those roads were only for military use, to expand the empire, but later on, it was also used for economic use. So it was used for trade between the cities. These are both factors who are extremely important for the livability of a city.
Yes, I see why infrastructure is so important. And sometimes I find myself thinking that when I travel by myself, I think that the public transport can be really slow. So can you tell me something about what the influence of different kinds of transport is in the city?
Well, first, public transport is far better than transport by car, because public transport produces less carbon emissions, and that's a big problem in the world right now. And furthermore, you get less congestions, like traffic congestions with public transport. So that's better, because congestions will result in economic damage, because time is money, and if you're stuck in traffic, you can't earn money.
And if I may ask, when thinking about the future city on Mars, having no cars, for example, and everyone is going by public transport, how will we manage that?
Well, for some things, we do need a car, and therefore, on Earth, we also see the concept of mobility as a service. While using an app, you can travel by public transport, for example, but also rent a car, which you share with many people, and therefore, there will be cars, but in a really less amount, because when public transport is good organized, it can be really much faster than a car. So, and it's better for the environment. But when, for example, furnishing a house, it's not really that efficient to use the public transport. So then you can rent a car.
So we should see a car more as something as a service thing than something that we own.
Yeah, I think that's better for the livability, because we use much less cars and it's better for the environment. Better. Well, also, like Tristan said, there is less economic damage because of less congestion.
Yeah, exactly. And if you want to build an infrastructure that's focused on less cars and more public transport, how will this shape the city? How will this influence the city?
Well, you also see that on the Earth, because we have transport-oriented development, TOD. And on that places, it's the case that development starts at places where there is much transport, where, for example, there is a road crossage, but also where there is a giant station. You see that in Utrecht, at the central station, for example, where there are many big businesses like Rabobank, but also the city hall from the city Utrecht. So you see at those places where there is good transport that there is really a high demand for business activity.
Maybe also because there will be less roads, maybe, because there will be no cars, there will be more space for more houses, more public spaces, more green in the city, which will make it even more livable.
Yeah, because it also results in less carbon emissions, so that's also good.
Yeah, that sounds really good. But it could happen, however, that the infrastructure of a city could become inadequate. What will you do then?
Well, certainly not invest in larger roads, I think, because it will only make the problem worse. Like, it's gonna make it better for some moments, but people are gonna use the road more then, and yeah, you got the problem all over again. So that's not gonna work, I think.
Yes.
Well, this is something you can also see right now when a highway is expanded. Well, some months it's nice, but all the people who are using other ways to avoid the traffic congestion on the highway, they start using the highway again, and the problem is back, and that will always be. So it's proven that expanding roads doesn't work. So
yes,
we'll not do that on Mars.
Yes, so we will have a new way of dealing with infrastructure problems. Like, we will find a new way to deal with them instead of...
For example, you can imagine the capacity of public transport. So therefore, there are much more options to use much little space to transport more people.
And you could also work from home, so stimulate that, or stimulate to work from different hours. Like nighttime, for example, it's not really good to work at night. But you know, if you just spread the time that you work more, then there will be less traffic congestions.
Mm-hmm. And maybe also because I imagine that a city on Mars cannot be very large with the technologies we have right now, that doing metro only is also an option to create space.
Yeah, sure. Good work. Yeah, it could really work.
Yes, all right. Thank you both for your takes on the infrastructure. And if I can conclude it, you're aiming for a new solutions for the infrastructure, since we have already gained much knowledge on the problems that we are facing on Earth right now. So we want to make a new policy, new tactics to deal with the infrastructure. Is that correct?
That's yes. Really correct. Thank you for listening.
Yes. So now we are moving on to green spaces. And on this subject, we have the experts, Kasper and Niels. And my first question, it's kind of basic. What are green spaces?
That's a good question, because people often think it's very obvious, but it's always important to stress the definition. So a green city attributes in multiple ways to more livability. Among others, there are environmental, social, and health advantages, which are also in a way connected to each other. Green spaces are also described as green infrastructure, which can be defined as connected system of natural and created green spaces. So green spaces can attribute a lot to the physical environment and create a lot of opportunities.
Yes, I see. So if there are multiple advantages, can you please tell me a bit more about the environmental advantages and why it is important for the livability of humans?
Well, yeah, there are obviously environmental advantages. Green infrastructure contributes to the adaptation and mitigation of climate change, which is a huge problem on Earth, and we should try to not make it a problem on Mars. And there is less air and noise pollution, obviously, and the air quality improves, which, you know, improves livability as well, because people can breathe normally and stay healthy. And it also reduces the common phenomenon, the heat island effect in cities, by reducing the temperature. That is because green spaces absorb less heat than stones do. And all of this also has a positive effect on the conservation of biodiversity, which makes it, I think, a pleasant experience to live in a city.
Yes, exactly. So it would be a nice way to adapt to living on a city on Mars to implement these health benefits of green spaces.
Exactly.
Yeah. And are there also some social benefits to green spaces?
Well, green infrastructure is also really important for health and social aspects. Spending time in green spaces has proven that it will lead to health benefits. Green spaces are used as places to exercise, and the less distance to green space, the more physical activity will take place. For example, running in a park or doing things like that. On top of that, some researchers, Katz and Hahn, have found that better accessibility to green space will generally lead to less obesity. Besides an improved effect on physical health, there is also a better mental health in greener areas.
Yeah, exactly. So, in conclusion, if we have a green city on Mars with a lot of green spaces, we create a happy environment and happy people, which could all improve everyone's well-being and the state of the city itself.
Yeah, that's true. And I want to add to that there is also found that green space, much more green space, will lead to a less feeling of loneliness. Green spaces also increase the level of social cohesion. The presence of green has an effect of social cohesion because it determines where people spend their leisure time. So they are going much more into a park and chat with other people. And therefore, green spaces are really important for a livable city.
Yes, exactly. So through using green space, we can improve the livability very effectively due to many advantages, if I'm understanding you guys correctly.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes. All right. And there are also a lot of health benefits to green space. And talking about health, I also would like to talk about health and safety in general. And Casper is an expert in this field. And I want to start with the basics. What is the definition of health?
It's obviously a very vague and broad definition. So broadly speaking, health is the ability of people to deal with the physical, emotional, and social challenges of life and to direct their own lives as much as possible. Furthermore, the World Health Organization defines health as a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease or infirmity. What we can make out of these definitions is that health is not just about having a healthy body, not having a disease or pain in some parts of the body, but it's also about being mentally in balance and feeling comfortable around yourself and others. And what we will see is that places, and in our context, our future city on Mars, can have a big influence on the health of citizens.
Yes. All right. So now that we know a little more about what health actually is, I'm starting to wonder if and how our city on Mars in the future, its built environment, can maybe have any impact on our health.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely a good question. Health and place are interrelated in all kinds of ways. So the places where we are born, where we grow up, where we study, like here in Utrecht, where we work, travel, all those places directly influence our health and well-being. This means that different places have different outcomes on our health. This has to do with factors such as rental prices, proximity to other places, access to a hospital, the amount of air pollution, etc., etc.
So a lot of factors.
A lot of factors, indeed. And for example, life expectancy and perceived good health is much lower in neighborhoods such as Kanaleiland and Overvecht when compared to East Utrecht and Leidsche Rijn. So it's also in very micro settings on neighborhood level. There are a lot of big differences, which, you know, has to do with that a lot of different factors can have influence on the health of citizens. And when putting it into the context of our future city on Mars, then we would argue that different parts of the city could have a different health impact on citizens. When thinking of our ideal city, I think it's fair to say that we, however, hope that the impact on the health of our citizens will be the same in all places.
Yes. So, if I may ask, it is really dependent how healthy you can live is dependent on where you are born.
Exactly.
That's what you want to
erase on Mars. That's my point. And so, you know, on Earth, there are a lot of people, where you are born, you know, it shapes your opportunities and also your health. And what we would like to see on Mars, in our future city, is that everyone has the same opportunities.
Yeah, exactly. And when we're talking about equality and equal opportunities, you were talking about how the place where you're born can influence your health opportunities. But you, of course, you don't determine that yourself. So assuming that our city on Mars will have a chance of being a city where different parts of the city will have different influence on citizens' health, how do you ensure that everyone has the opportunity to equal health possibilities?
Yeah, it's indeed a very challenging topic to talk about. So on the one hand, health should be a basic human right for everyone, obviously. Health should be for everyone. It's also part of the Sustainable Development Goals. On the other hand, the current world has shown that not everyone has had the same opportunities for adequate health. So in a city, it's important to have inclusion, and everyone in a city is unique, has different needs, opinions, different interests, which all need to be looked after as much as possible. So in the context of health, it can mean that everyone should live near hospitals or specialized institutions. And when citizens do not have a car, for example, public transport should be a fast and efficient alternative for it.
Yes, but should everyone in the city have equal health? That's another topic, but also important because not everyone needs the same amount of healthcare, right?
That's correct. So there's a misconception about equal health. Many people assume that health should be equal for everyone. However, health being equal among all actually means that everyone has the same health insurance, etc., those kind of things. But what people forget is that not everyone needs the same healthcare. For example, one person might have some certain disease, while the other person doesn't have major health complications. The one person with disease obviously needs more healthcare than the healthy one. So it would be rather strange if they both receive the same healthcare. So what my point is that our future city on Mars should rather focus on health equity. This means that every citizen will have the same opportunities for healthcare. In this way, citizens can have the freedom to choose the amount of healthcare they need, but there won't be a possible social divide between different groups of the city, which is very important because I think we can all agree that we want a city of inclusion, where everyone gets the same chances and opportunities to a healthy life.
Right. Thank you for your take on how health should be shaped on Mars and health facilities and inclusion. So now we are moving on to public spaces, another aspect of livability. And Flore is an expert on this subject. So Flore, why are public spaces important for a future city on Mars?
Well, one of the key characteristics of a city is the diversity of its citizens. In a city, people with different backgrounds meet and live close to each other, whether they want it or not. And one of the main stages where meetings between people with diverse backgrounds can take place are public spaces. So public spaces are places where people meet other people that they do or don't know yet, where they exchange and discuss, where they show their political stances, for example, by demonstrating, and where they celebrate culture. think of festivals and public events and street artists. So public spaces are a place where people meet. And meeting in this context doesn't necessarily mean finding your new best friend. And many of the meetings in public space are rather short and shallow, but they are important for mutual understanding and a sense of community in a city. But sadly, not all public spaces are equally fit to support these kinds of exchanges.
Yes, all right. So why do some public spaces support contact and exchange better than others? How does this work?
Well, the Danish architect Gill developed a model in which he says public spaces have three main functions: necessary use, optional or recreational use, and social use. And necessary use, first of all, includes commuting, running errands, and other functional activities. And optional use describes activities that people do in a public space voluntarily, like picnicking, for example, or meeting with friends.
Yeah, so you have the basic things you do and the more extra stuff, basically, is what you're saying.
Exactly. And then there's the third function is social use. And this consists of more coincidental meetings with people that result from necessary and especially from optional use. So social use is the result of the other two. And since optional use means that people voluntarily use a public space, it largely depends on the quality of the space. If people find it unattractive, then they can decide not to use it. And because social use results mostly from optional use, social use also depends on the quality of the space.
And what are the benefits of these interactions?
Well, as I mentioned, most of these interactions are rather short and shallow. But they can contribute to a sense of community. And also, some scientists argue that they help in mutual understanding. Other scientists say that public spaces are not the most important spaces for mutual understanding, and that places like micro-publics, and those are, for example, schools or community centers, are more important for this because those places create more intense, deeper social connections and in this way also create a broader mutual understanding. Mm-hmm. But these public spaces are mostly important for, well, the shallow sense of community interactions. And also, of course, there are other functions of social space like the economic side. There are places for trade. Markets take place in public space and places for, as I mentioned before, political stances, showing your opinion and demonstrating. And they have this cultural function, so festivals and street artists and places for cultural exchange.
Interesting.
Yes, so also if I'm understanding correctly, a good public space can contribute to the community on the city of Mars. But what makes a public space good?
Well, another scientist, Mehta, developed a model with five main factors that contribute to the quality of a public space. And those five factors are inclusiveness, meaningful activities, attractiveness, comfort, and safety. And the first two, inclusiveness and meaningful activities, are more a social aspect. And attractiveness, comfort, and safety are rather focused on the physical environment of the space. So an inclusive public space is a space that can accommodate many different types of people and activities, and in that way contributes to exchange between people. And the factor meaningful activities is about the extent to which a space supports useful activities, like protesting or exercising or running errands. And if this is the case, people have a reason to go to that space regularly, and in that way they will develop a personal attachment to the space.
I think that what you said about good public space is very interesting. However, I got another question for you. You said that there are different functions of public space. So don't these different functions result in conflict?
Well, as I mentioned, inclusiveness, for example, never works out for 100% in the space, because there's always some way of conflict between different users of the space. And many public spaces, certain parts of the area are claimed by a certain group that is always using that space, for example, for skating or for hanging around or for sport classes. So there's always a kind of a conflict between different users. And then I mentioned the five main factors that contribute to a quality of space. And those factors are rather complementing than conflicting. So there's always a bit of conflict in the public space, but it's not necessarily between these different factors. Also because they are not factors of use, for example. Different uses of a space can create conflicts, skating and picnicking or sport classes. But these are rather different ways of looking at a space and the functions it provides. So it's not the function in the term of practical use of a space. So maybe it's good to elaborate on what these functions are, because I mentioned inclusiveness and meaningful activities. And another, a third one that's more focused on the physical aspect of the space is attractiveness. And attractiveness of a space is influenced by its so-called immeasurability. And this is the extent to which we can remember and recognize a place. And this immeasurability is higher if different elements of the space seem coherent and if the space is visible and easily accessible. So this shows that transport plays an important role in the functionality of a public space. If you can't reach it, it's hard to use it. And other important factors for attractiveness are the scale of the objects in the space, because the space is more attractive if these objects have a human scale, and the enclosure of the space, because the attractiveness also increases if the space is enclosed by trees or buildings. And then the fourth function is comfortable, is being comfortable in the space. And a place is comfortable if it protects against adverse weather conditions like rain and wind. And this relates to the green space aspect of livability, because green space reduces heat, for example, and pollution, air pollution. So green can help to make a place comfortable. So there's a lot of interconnections between the different themes we talk about today. Another aspect of a comfortable place is that it needs a place to sit down and stay in the place. So benches, for example, are really important. And then last but not least, a place should feel safe for people in order for them to stay there. And this feeling of safety is influenced by a lot of factors. And some of them are maintenance or the lack thereof of the space, the presence of litter, and the presence of other people, the so-called eyes on the street. And this is something that I think Leila will also elaborate on. Eyes on the street is a concept by a geographer called Jacobs, who found out in New York that people feel safer if there are other people around in the street. So to go back to the question of clashing functions, we've seen that these five functions are really different perspectives to look at the space. So they don't necessarily clash like different uses of space clash, because they support each other, so to say.
Yes, all right. So public spaces have many dimensions, basically, is what you've explained. And there's also a lot of interconnectedness with other aspects we've talked about until right now. So green spaces and health and also with mixed functions, which is what we are going to talk about now. And Leila is an expert in this field. So my first question is, why are mixed functions important?
Well, our city focuses on different aspects that contribute to livability. And in our current world, cities are more and more diversified. So this will definitely also be the case for our future city on Mars. This means that there should be an increasing effort to create and maintain social interactions between different groups of people. Just as Flora just mentioned, public spaces are very important, and they are a perfect example of places with mixed use. But in order to paint a complete picture of why mixed functions have a lot of benefits, I want to go back to a few elements that direct important characteristics in cities nowadays. The first being the gender-specific division of labor. Historically, there's a distinction in roles of women and men in terms of caregiving. Since women historically do the caregiving work in their families and communities, they are the key users of the more residential or recreational public spaces and overall environment in their neighborhood. Men, on the other hand, traditionally have to commute to work and use less of the urban space close to home, but use more of the transportation network. Cities often cater to this difference in caregiving roles, which is seen in how urban planning is often done through a male perspective. Even though women play a much larger role in community building and as initiators of social networks by their use of their residential environments.
So why is equality between these roles so important for the livability of a city?
Well, the difference in these roles leads to a fragmented approach to urban planning, as I just said. For instance, residential areas, work areas, and recreational areas are segregated, which in turn makes for extensive transportation networks and less social interactions because these different groups of people don't interact with each other because they don't come into contact with each other. And with modern developments in equality, this traditional perspective on spatial and urban planning is obsolete. So in our future city, these physical characteristics will be changed in order to reflect society's current composition or society's future composition, actually. So the use of mixed functions in urban planning is in line with a more demanding workload and the speed of modern life. So mixing functions such as work and housing can save energy and in turn limit pollution by reducing travel times. The use of mixed functions is seen in the concept of a compact city in many European and North American cities. This concept is seen as a great way to create livable, sustainable and attractive urban environments, which are exactly points that contribute to livability. This concept is not new. However, the benefits of mixing functions is often taken for granted, and there are many more possible advantages when building an entire city based on this concept.
So you were talking about sustainability, and what is your take on how mixed functions can contribute to increasing sustainability in a city?
Well, I just mentioned this shortly, but when you're mixing functions such as work and residential functions, there's much less need for long commuting times because people live closer to their homes. And as you can imagine, then there's also less need for people to all have cars or to have extensive use of public transport. So you save energy and in turn limit pollution just because there's a reduction of travel times. So I already shed light on the benefits regarding travel times and sustainability, but an equally important aspect is the contribution to urban diversity. Mixed functions contribute to increasing social interactions by having more activity in different areas of a city and during different times of the day or week, but also increasing the different types of interactions by bringing different groups of people together. So think about working people, families, recreational groups, whereas the divide in functions limits the amount of interactions that these different groups can have. So, for example, combining work and residential areas results in activity on the streets during the day, but also at night or on the weekends. So the amount of social interactions is much larger when you're mixing functions. Flora already mentioned this, but the eyes on the streets concept is enabled due to a spread of activity on the streets. So this means that there are always people on the street at all times of the day or week, which leads to crime prevention and promotes safety.
So if I understand correctly, there's a lot of overlap between the advantages of mixed functions and public spaces, right? Because eyes on the street are part of safety of public spaces, but they result from mixed functions, for example.
Yeah, exactly. Public spaces are often examples of spaces that have different functions in them. So as you already said before, there are different types of people that make use of this space, and you have these short interactions, which also lead to more of a community feeling. And this community feeling also helps to promote safety in such areas.
All right, so thank you, Laila, for shedding light on how mixed functions can contribute to the livability of city, and also how equality plays an important role as well in that. So this was our take on how the livability in Mars could be at its best. And we've talked about mixed functions, good infrastructure, green in the city, health, and public spaces and facilities. So this is our take on how livability contributes to creating the best possible city on Mars. We as human geography students hope that you've learned how to create a livable city, and not just on Mars in the future, but also on Earth right now. Thank you, experts, for being here and sharing your knowledge. And thank you, listener, for taking the time out of your day to educate yourself on livability. And we'll see each other on Mars.